It's the Warbler Crazy Podcast, talking all things warblers, birding, photography, gear, and even bagels on the road. Join the fun and foolishness with your co-host, Stephen Michaels, and his sidekick, Enrico Palazzo. Now, from their bunkers in suburban New Jersey, it's time for Warbler Crazy.
Hey now, welcome to Warbler Crazy. I am your host, Stephen Michaels, and I like bird photography a whole lot. And if you do as well, well then, please don't forget to subscribe to our channel. As usual, the Lucille to my Negan, the Sam to my Frodo, the Wilson to my Tom Hanks, always my ride or die, my sidekick, the Enrico Palazzo. How are you, buddy?
The Lucille to your Negan?
It works.
I like that one. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing well. So I, had an incredible bird feeder day, probably the best bird feeder day I'll ever have in my life.
Oh, really?
Probably the best that most people will have. On my feeder right now, actually, for the last 6 hours, is a rose-breasted grosbeak and a blue-headed vireo, which came by, and a yellow warbler. It's been fantastic. Yeah, and I got some really, really insane shots of the grosbeak actually on my perch. So I will be posting those, and I will be sharing them, especially with our guest here. So what's going on with you there?
I'm getting skunked. I don't know what happened over at my feeder. You know, I set it up, was it a little over a week ago? And I went with some generic seed in the beginning, and I had all kinds of birds, ruby crown kinglet, goldfinch, towhee, cardinals, woodpeckers came in, all kinds of stuff. That ran out. I changed feed, got the wrong stuff, and it became a ghetto scene of house sparrows. They pushed everything out. They scared everything away. Cleaned a feeder out, went to a better seed. I did my research this time, got the right stuff, but it's been quiet, man. I haven't had anything really new for a couple of days, and today I had nothing. It's quiet in the empty lot across the street.
Well, hopefully we'll be getting out soon, as those listening, and by this point we'll have already been out for a couple of weeks, but as we're recording this today, it has been noted by our governor here in New Jersey that the state parks will be opening this Saturday, so we'll be
Saturday
out doing some warbler hunting, so we're super excited. But let's get to the business at hand here. We just keep getting these really cool, incredible guests who keep coming on with us.
What are these people doing on this show?
I don't know. We keep asking. It's like it just keeps happening. We do have a crazy special guest. He's a former news photographer with the Asbury Park Press. He's also worked with the New York Times and the Star Ledger. He knows his podcast, so we have to be on our A game tonight. He launched the podcast series at Adorama. He was also immortalized as a guest photographer in the What the Duck comic strip. And now he's the shaman of camera lenses, the content marketing manager at the Sigma Corporation. Ooh. Please say hello to Jack Howard. Jack, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Jack. How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. I, too, am very excited to see the state parks will be opening soon. It's nice. That'll be nice to be able to get back out and have people enjoy a little bit more of the open space and get on with some birding. The biggest chirping thing I've had in my yard this week, I had a chipmunk that sat on my back step and just chirped its little chipmunk head off for about 45 minutes the other night.
Jesus.
Stopped about twilight and started up again the next morning. Just chirp. I'm looking all over the place, and then I look down, and there he is, just chipmunking away. So that's been it. It might have been the turkey vultures flying overhead.
That's what you get for playing all those Captain and Tennille records.
Hey, so Jack, welcome to our little program. The past few episodes have been very, very birder specific. We've had a couple of field guide authors, and we had a author who wrote the warbler guide. So we're kind of reeling it in a little bit and talking more gear and photography. So we wanted to just kind of
finally,
really, Yeah, yeah, I know. This is Enrico's wheelhouse. I tend to be a little more birder specific, but this is finally some of the episodes that he's been looking forward to. And not that I'm not looking forward to having you on, but when I researched you, I always, you know, and any guest, I always love being surprised at what people do to, you know, prior to where they are now. And you had a pretty heavy run with being in journalism as a photographer. What's a day like as a news photographer?
Oh, that was a long time ago. It was different. It was amazing. Being a news photographer is one of the most incredible ways to learn how to shoot anything, anywhere, anytime with whatever gear you have. You know, the news photographer adage is make photos, not excuses. If you've got an ultra wide lens and that's what's in your bag and there's something that's happening, you have to figure out how to do it. If you got a super telephoto and there's action happening close to you, you got to figure out how to make it happen. If you can't say that the sun's the wrong way, you can't wait for the golden hour. You have to be there at that time and figure out how to make the most of the scene, the situation, and work that situation to both make something that's technically proficient and tells the story. And so for many, many years, that was exactly what I did. And it was such an incredible way to learn how to visually tell whatever the story was, from human interest stories to breaking news to, you know, just the natural goings on with, you know, sunrise, sunset, birding and whatnot. Here in New Jersey, I'm a Jersey boy, born and bred, grew up in Manasquan, now live in Somerset County, which has been my home base for about the past 15 years. And been in Bridgewater Township on the side of the hill for the past 2 years. And I loved being a news photographer, and it was an absolutely fantastic way to just grow and learn as a photographer.
That's some trial by fire.
Yes, it is. And just every day being there of whatever it is, you get an assignment, you just have to take it and you have to look at it and you can say, oh, this has no visual appeal. This is fantastic. And you'd be surprised. Sometimes the stories that in the quiet stories, those soft stories, some of those are the shots that are still in my portfolio. Just those moments of just the human interest. It was an incredible, incredible experience that I learned so much about how to both listen, learn, observe, and that still carries over so much with what I do. And one of the most amazing things I get to do now with Sigma is help photographers tell their own stories. And being both a writer and a photographer, and working so strongly with words and images and helping so many photographers craft their stories to help us educate and illuminate the beauty of photography is something that I'm very, very lucky to have been able to do for such a long time.
Cool. Well, I'm sure you know the great director Stanley Kubrick, obviously. I don't know if you knew or not, but he started off as a news photographer as well and had a pretty telling quote. I think if I had gone to college, I would never have been a director, but he owed his ability to telling visual stories and later becoming the iconic director he did by being a news photographer. So I'm assuming there's some truth that, you know, to becoming a more visual storyteller by being a news photographer would probably have helped him and had helped you with that.
I totally agree. And actually right now, one of my favorite parts of the job is being one of the first people to get to play. And I'm going to use the word play because it's so much fun. Get to play and experiment and explore the new lenses that come out either before they're launched officially, or right after they come out and the first samples start shipping in. And understanding that and understanding how an ultra wide is going to feel different than a standard or a fast aperture prime and what a telephoto zoom is going to do, but also being able to break out of those hard and fast typecast mindsets that too often lenses are just marketed to, like a super telephoto lens is only good for this, or an ultra wide is only for landscape. That news photographer lens that I bring to it makes me be able to say, okay, well, here's all the use cases that I can see for an ultra wide, from, you know, architectural photography to journalistic, you know, uses during, you know, weddings and special event photography. And that's just, it's just fun. That is one of the most fun parts of the job.
How does that shift happen from photographer to marketing vis-a-vis creativity getting in there?
It's very, very difficult to explain, but it all sort of just strangely converged where the skill set.
That's okay. We got time.
The skill sets that were needed to write and the skill sets that were needed to like manage a, you know, some web pages and communicate about photography and communicate photography all just sort of came together in this strange sort of convergence where the aspects that remain the same throughout are storytelling and communicating on emerging platforms. And that's still at the heart of, at the end of the day, is at the heart of who I am as a creative. And that's what comes through in everything I do. And that's what I that's what I hope comes through in everything that I do. And being able to enable and empower the creative folks, and able to be able to educate and communicate technical information in a way that makes sense in order to help creatives better express themselves is one of the things that's one of the core values that I always try to bring. This is going to be a very bad paraphrase, but one of the one of the things that means the most to me is on a review on Amazon of my book Practical HDRI. A reviewer who I'd never met. This wasn't a planted review or anything, and these words just meant so much to me. But he said, although he's talking about some of the most difficult concepts in photography, Mr. Howard writes in a crisp, concise, and easygoing style. And it was just like, I wanted to like reach out through Amazon and give this person a hug and say, thank you. that is my intent with every, yeah, with every,
that's the goal.
With everything, sure. I do, that's what I try to do. I try to connect the dots for people and help people connect the dots with the information they need to make informed purchases and best use those purchases with the lenses. And it's great. I mean, being able to market photography and market camera gear is wonderful because you already have, you have an impassioned crew of people who just want to discover how to best, you know, realize their passion and their visions. And I mean, when I see incredible shots of warblers, it's one of those things that drives me crazy because I'm a beach person. I love the big birds. I love egrets. I love seagulls. I can spend a day with herring gulls and, you know, juvenile, whatever they are. You can't tell them apart unless you have a guidebook because this one's model. It's mm-hmm. changing its beak color at the minute, but I'll just hang out with whatever bird there is and take pictures of them all day. When it comes to like warblers and these tiny little things, they just, they're like my kryptonite.
That's our jam.
That's it.
That's, you know, our jam, man.
That's what we do. But you know,
Jack, I can tell you this: you're doing a good job because Sigma's the whole reason I bailed out of Pentax and got into a Nikon camera.
Really? Congratulations. Well,
absolutely. Yeah.
It's
so, you know, and the big topic with us, Jack. Yeah, we end up kind of having a crossroads of two topics that always come in, and this has really been the theme, and it's two things: music and joy. And the way that you're describing your role with Sigma, there's a joy that comes from you. I can hear it. I can hear your excitement about it, and clearly that you're in a fun environment. I mean, it's work, but you're passionate about it, and I think that that's something that you know, it just comes right off of you.
Oh, good. I'm glad that shows. I mean, we are a very small, lean organization, but we are a very passion-driven organization. Gazuto-san, the CEO, is honestly one of the most brilliant people I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. The dedication and the brilliance that he brings to bringing products to market is just, it makes it very easy for us right now. I mean, the Sigma is, I mean, it's a humble brag, but I like to think we're doing some pretty incredible things and have really you know, upped the game and made people rethink what to expect from a camera lens company. I'll tell you, like the 150 to 600 contemporary lens, which is a great birding lens.
That's mine. That's my jam right yeah. there. It's the one I use.
This is a lens. I wrote this in our blog a couple of years ago, and I mean these words as true today as the day I wrote them. This is the lens I've been waiting for my entire life. I have never felt more comfortable with that, with a lens in my hand where I don't feel like I'm making too many compromises. I can carry that thing all day. I can sling it over my shoulder. I can, you know, hop in my car and drive to Sandy Hook, and I can walk 7 to 8 miles up and down all through the mud swamps, all through the mud flats. And as it's just, it's ready. It's super sharp at F5.6. The autofocus is crisp and clean. I don't feel like I've never been that guy who can sit stock still in a bird blind with a 400-28 on a, you know, gimbal tripod head waiting for hours. I'm the active photographer, and I just need that thing slung over my shoulder. And when you look at that as a variable aperture zoom lens and what it does at its price point compared to a variable aperture zoom lens from like 20 years ago and 30 years ago, and it is such an incredible time for photographers. The cameras are fantastic. The lens science across the board is just through the roof in terms of the imaging quality. And a lot of those old hard and fast rules, like, oh, you need a 2.8 super telephoto behemoth in order to get a good picture of a bird. Like, well, yes, you did when digital cameras, ISO 1600 was a grainy mess. That might have been true. But now that, like, I mean, ISO 25,000 is like crystal clear.
It's okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, when you think about a 600 millimeters difference at depth of field at F5.6 and, you know, 2.8 or F4 at, you know, 20 yards is negligible. It's, you know, and you can go on your depth of field charts and you figure all this out. And so it's a completely new game. And everything that has been happening in digital imaging from Sigma and from the entire industry has just really upped the game. And you know the competition among all of these companies is making it a fantastic time for the end users, because competition breeds excellent products, and it's great to see.
All right, you know a little bit ago you touched on what Sigma is doing to communicate with their users. And obviously, social media, right? Part of your gig. Steve told me that you guys met corresponding through Twitter. Is that right?
Absolutely. His birding shots were, I was seeing them in the feed every day. I was like, these are fantastic. And it's, I mean, the Meadowlands, I, you know, commuted by train into Manhattan 3 years ago and to pop an American photo. And my favorite part was when I started you get just past Newark and you're going through the meadows, and I'd be sitting there and be going, there's that snowy egret again. There's the, great blue heron. And you're just here next to that little going through this, the meadows and the marshes underneath the skyscrapers. And there's all these birds. And, you know, I mean, the National Geographic did an article about the Meadowlands and the Great Swamp a couple of years ago. And I bet you there's so many commuters who have sat on that train that have never looked out the window and, you know, just taking a look at how much nature there is out there. And, you know, being a Jersey guy myself, seeing the Meadowlands birding, I was like, hey, yeah, they're going to start retweeting this. And we're always, you know, we're always looking and communicating and connecting through social media. I mean, that's, like I said, going back to earlier, that's how I wound up going from being a news photographer to working at Pop to working at Diorama and now working at Sigma. It's that people connection. And that's one of the great things about photography is its ability to connect people.
Well, being that you guys are watching social media so carefully, can you give us some of the ideas of what's the right way and the wrong way for a photographer to build a following on social media? Because that's a challenge.
Be honest, be earnest, be helpful. Figure out how to stand out without shouting out. And that's basically the best advice I can give. And I can tell you, Liam Duran, he's one of our ambassadors. He's a fantastic ski photographer based in Breckenridge. And he reached out to us through Facebook and said, hey, I'm loving your stuff. I'm taking some things. I just bought this lens. It's fantastic. And over the course of years, we started working together. And he is such a team player, and just tossed him a, you know, blog assignment. And he just managed to like parlay that into working tightly with us because of the right attitude, excellent images, hitting deadlines, and being easy to go and work with. And so I didn't actually answer your question right there as to how to build a social media following, but I did give a blueprint for how to work with companies. We get honestly about 40 to 50 pitches a week, if not a day, from people who want to be sponsored, who want to work with us in some way, shape, or form. And that's the Liam example is the best way for somebody to break in. Reach out, be patient. If you're given an assignment, nail it and just prove yourself to be easygoing, reliable, and able to repeat that over time. And that's that. And as far as, you know, growing social media, it's just consistency. And find an angle that's going to work for you.
And there it is.
There you go. So we have the content marketing manager here with us, and we need to talk some gear. So, Jack, when you're out shooting birds, not during a pandemic, what's your gear of choice? What are you shooting with?
Usually the 150, usually a Canon 60 or a Rebel T3i, that kind of camera for birding, honestly, with the 150 to 600 contemporary or 60 to 600 sports. Those are my two go-tos. The other one I like is the 100 to 400 contemporary. That's a nice lightweight kit. That's a really compact little lens for DSLRs. And that's it. I prefer compact, lightweight, and portable, and a zoom.
All right. You know, Steve shoots primarily with the 150 to 600 sports and the 60 to 600 sports. As I mentioned before, I use, in fact, it's Steve's old lens. I use the 150 to 600 contemporary. And I like it a lot because not only is it extremely sharp, but as you mentioned, it's relatively easy to deal with all day. I had a pretty severe neck injury. Steve knows about it a couple of years ago, and I've got the plates and screws in my neck now holding me all together. So having a lens that's a bit lighter really works for me. There's a lot of internet debate about differences between the sports lines and the contemporary lines. Being that you're here and you actually know the answer to these questions, I want to see if we can't answer this once and for all. What are the actual differences between the sports and the contemporary lines?
Let's start specifically with 150 to 600 sports and contemporary. This is one of the most popular questions we get. The differences between what are the differences? I'm going to answer that first, and then I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you what's similar between them. In a nutshell, differences are about 2 pounds, about $1,000, and the weather sealing. The 150 to 600 sports is about 7 pounds. It is got a 105 millimeter front element, and it's got a very, it's got a very metallic build. It's very weather sealed and it's very ruggedized. So it's got a bit more weather sealing and it's got a more rugged body. The 150 to 600 contemporary has a 95 millimeter front element and a slightly different optical configuration. And it is about just about 4.3 pounds, if my memory serves me correctly. There was a time I could tell you every single lens and their exact weights, but I'm a few years older and we have more lenses now. But those are the differences. The center of frame sharpness is on both of these lenses is pretty much spot on, you know, particularly with human vision. At, you know, presentation size, if you're going to look at MTF charts at maximum magnification, you might notice a little bit of a center of frame difference, but not really. The edge of frame difference, the sports with this larger element is going to be a little bit sharper towards the edges of the frame. But the, what's more striking is the similarities between these two lenses. They all have zoom lock at the multiple at every marked focal length. Yep. They all have custom focus limiters. They all have the focus limiters built in. They all have the push-pull zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as Sigma lenses, they all have 100% optical quality control testing on Foveon proprietary MTF devices at the factory in Aizu, Japan. So the similarities between these lenses are much more striking than their slight differences. You know, and what do you need more? It's what's more important to you? Is it the value pricing, or is it the very, very rugged construction? Is it the weight? Is it, the weatherproofing? Because there's some photographers who will say, I'm going to take the lighter lens and get a rain hood. There's some photographers who say, I don't like rain hoods, but I want to be out all day with something that if I drop it, or if it, gets rained on, it's absolutely going to be safe. Then you want to go with the sport. If the weight mm-hmm. and the cost are your primary, primary considerations, go for the contemporary. If you want the most durable design, go for the sport. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, because that's exactly why I went the direction that I went. I wasn't kidding before when I said that Sigma was the reason that I got out of the Pentax cameras. I'd been using Sigma lenses on my K3-2. In fact, I was doing warbler shooting with the 150 to 500. Mm-hmm. I had a 120 to 400 EX before that I absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. The optics on that lens were amazing. But, I saw what Steve was doing with his rig, and I knew that a lot of it was attributable to the lens. And there was, when Sigma and all the other manufacturers actually just bailed on their third-party support for Pentax, there was no going forward. There was no more path for me. I tried their 150 to 450. I didn't like it. I rented it a couple of times, and I never got any good results with it. When it came time to get out, the cost and the weight, I was very, very concerned about the weight, because the 150 to 500 really made me feel like I was at my limit. Mm-hmm. Steve and I go out for a long time, and I get tired and it hurts. But the minute I went to this, it was worth every bit. It was absolutely the right decision all the way around.
I totally understand what you mean. The reach, the range, the lightweightness, you can haul it all day. And you've got 600 millimeter reach, and it's just wow.
It's brilliant.
And it's
brilliant. The
wide open F6.3, and you're just wide open, and you don't have to stop down, and it's super sharp. I know exactly what you mean.
No, it's great. So while we're talking about what wasn't coming anywhere on the horizon for my old rig, what is new on the Sigma horizon that you can share with us without having to give away a trade secret or violate a blood oath?
We generally don't talk roadmap, but
okay.
If you look at everything that Sigma has done over the past decade, we just continue to innovate. Mirrorless lenses are super hot right now. We've just introduced the Sigma FP camera, which is absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Smallest full frame mirrorless camera right now. It does ISO 6 to ISO 100 and 2000.
Wow.
And it'll do 120 frames per second at full HD in .MOV mode, and 4K 12-bit in cinema DNG mode. This is, professional filmmakers are using this as a camera, and it's also just a great compact camera. It's incredibly modular. It's just about the size of a deck of cards, and it scales up however you want it. You put a hand grip on it if you need it. You build out, the hot shoe is plugged onto it, but the base is just super compact. And so we're very, very excited about the FP and the L mount system in general. Our partnership with Leica and Panasonic on the shared lens and, camera mount communication protocol, and just keep your eye out for, just new and exciting gear, both cameras and lenses on, the most popular platforms. And right now, this is really cool. I mean, we're doing the Sigma Shot at Home photo contest now through the end of June, with the new contest each week for both still and video. And with the new contest right now for still and video. And each week there's great prizes. And we're seeing the creativity we're seeing of people who are stuck at their homes and are really up in their game to enter this contest is fantastic. You don't have to, you don't have to be shooting a Sigma camera or Sigma lens to get involved. And you can visit our blog, blog.sigmaphoto.com, to see some of the winning shots. And this, it's not live yet, but this week's video piece is just absolutely brilliant. And just the creativity of the filmmakers and the still photographers is just it's just really shining through. And you know, everything we can do to contribute to that, keeping creatives creating, is, you know, what we try to do with the Sigma mission.
I definitely can speak firsthand to the support that Sigma gives its customers. Jack had afforded me the opportunity to write a blog post for Sigma, and I took that opportunity and ran with it on a post about the warblers and the birds of New Jersey. And I've gotten to test the 60 to 600, and at some point down the road, hopefully we'll be testing some more stuff. But yeah, definitely Sigma has been a great company from an outsider's perspective to be associated or affiliated with. So thank you for everything with that, Jack. Moving into staying the course with New Jersey birds, you shoot a lot at Sandy Hook. I know your own blog post, you kind of have a affinity for Sandy Hook, and it's definitely one of our special places. But what are your favorite birds to shoot when you're out at Sandy Hook?
Whatever's there that day. I mean, for me, it's, you know, it's just, I do work at a desk most of the time now, but being able to get out, I'm happy with whatever bird is out that day, you know, even if it's a little house sparrow, but, you know, you don't see many of them at the Hook. I mean, I love great blue herons, the least terns, oyster catchers are probably my, as an adult, the bird that I've come to love the most is the oyster catchers. They crack me up. Their whistles as they whistle, as they fly. And if I can spend an afternoon with the oyster catchers, that's what really makes me happy. I just love every spot on the Hook, and you know, and I just love Sandy Hook because, I mean, you could show up, you pull in, you park at the first parking area, you go, you check out the beach side, check out the bay side. Is there anything happening? No, you go up to the next spot. Is there anything happening? You go here, and you just, you work up the point. Then you go, you stop at the lighthouse, you talk to the rangers, say, is any very interesting sightings this day, and they tell you there was something here that was amazing. You know, there was a tufted duck, but it's gone. Nobody's seen it for 3 days, and you're like, okay. I absolutely love Sandy Hook. We also vacation every summer down in Cape May, so, you know, just even walking out, you know, onto Madison Street Beach, you know, or Madison Ave Beach, Madison Street in summer, Madison Ave is in Cape May. Walking out to Madison Ave Beach and just seeing what you see, whether it's just going to be, you know, a couple of herring gulls, or if you're going to see oyster catchers, or if you're going to see the occasional kittiwake or whatever, there's something incredible out there. Throwing the 150 to 600 in my backpack and hopping on my bike and, you know, riding out to the lighthouse and stopping at the meadows and seeing what you're going to see in those, you know, those brackish ponds right there. Whatever you see, it's just, I mean, sometimes for me, it's not even about what birds I see. It's just about getting out there with the potential and, you know, just escaping and being out there. And if I get a good shot, I get a good shot.
Yeah.
And if not,
sure.
If not, I had a day out in the sun with the camera, with the birds, and, you know, got some fresh air and walked around.
Well, we've especially come to appreciate just being outside in ways that we never have in our lifetime. So, you know, like I got out on Sunday to my spot here in the Meadowlands, and I saw some migrating birds. And I was just like, I said to my wife who was with me, I'm just like, I don't care if I get anything. I'm just happy to be outside.
Right.
So, you know, taking it to that level is really just like, it's just you're enjoying the environment. And sometimes I think, I know I do, I tend to think so competitively with myself, not with anybody else, but just like, I've got to get this part. I've got to get, and then I go, holy crap, I'm not at a desk. I'm not working. I'm out. So yeah, you're right. And I think that that's part of it. And when you're out for a while, you slow down and you kind of just decompress. And then all of a sudden you're on a bird and your fun meter is just peaking. So I know before we wrap up, I have one spot that I know I turned you on to. And that is the Ocean City Bridge, which is,
ooh,
you know, you're
going
to see something at that spot.
Always, always.
I was actually just speaking about that this afternoon to a friend of mine who we work with, who has left Brooklyn and is at their house in Ocean City. And I asked her if she'd had a chance to be out there. That is such an incredible spot. And yes, thank you for letting me know about that. Wow, that is such a fantastic spot. And one of the things I love most about this spot is it's very accessible, particularly for people who may have some mobility issues or who can't get off of a paved path. The fact that you have so many, and anybody who doesn't know this, what we're talking about, the Ocean City Bridge on the way into Ocean City, New Jersey, goes through Great Egg Harbor. And in the middle of it is the Chamber of Commerce and a parking lot, which is on a little island that is a waiting bird rookery. And it is just right off of the road, right off of the parking lot. It's just a wall of nesting birds.
Herons, ibis, egret. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, the whole gang is there.
Yes, yes. You told me about it, and it took a long time for me to get there. I got there last summer, and I was like, this is incredible. I have to go back here, and I have to. I'm hoping that we get down for a week in Cape May, and hoping that I can get up at the crack of dawn and be there when the morning light is going to be shining right on that. But that is absolutely spectacular.
It's something you need to do one time, and just be up there when you hear those birds, the light is coming up. It's a magical time. We actually will drive up, you know, from northern New Jersey, leave here at like 2 in the morning, and to get down there right at 5 o'clock, set up, you know, have a coffee, and then, you know, find a hotel in the area and come back the following day. That's how insane.
That's what we did. Yeah,
we are. That's the kind of crazy we are. But it's something you have to do, Jack. And if you do get down there and you want to get up early, you bring the lenses. We'll bring the coffee.
All right. I will let you know if you know, I should be down in Cape May this summer. I'll let you know. Make sure it's going to happen.
Let's hope so.
The other thing for that spot is bring your bug spray. That's
yep.
That's green everywhere.
Not as bad, but the mosquitoes are pretty bad, and the Nasiums are terrible over there. So, you know, that's part of it, I guess. You know, if you're not in it, you're not going to win it. But Jack, hey, we are out of time, but I wanted to again thank you for coming on with us and sharing a little bit of your career and just kind of what's up with Sigma and how to better market yourself, and obviously just wanted to thank you for the time. And did you have
a great time? Thank you for having me on.
It was great, Jack.
Well, yeah, thank you so much. So everybody, again, this is, you know, Warbler Crazy 10th episode. Please, if you like us, subscribe. We have a couple more episodes for season one to go, and we're hopefully going to do this again later this summer with another run of episodes. So for my buddy Enrico Palazzo and our guest Jack Howard, I'm Stephen Michaels. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.